Nelly Mackay is a notoriously experimental singer-songwriter.
Brother, brother, can you hear me say? Not long before I've just gone undercover. Selfish, stupid, so self-serious, bold, dash, I got no money.
For her new album, Mackay takes on the music of the notoriously conventional, the Hollywood actress and singer Doris Day. Reviewer Robert Christgau says the two actually have some common ground.
Nelly Mackay first declared her love for Doris Day in a 2007 book review she wrote for the New York Times. Mackay said of this exemplary pop singer, whose wholesome persona made her Hollywood's biggest female draw, her music is uncluttered, sensual, and free, driven by an irrepressible will to live. Here's an example.
Gonna take a sentimental journey. Gonna set my heart at ease.
We just heard a sparer version of Sentimental Journey, the signature song whose big band rendition opens Doris Day's 2-CD retrospective, Golden Girl. When Nelly Mackay takes up the tune, she strips it down even more.
Got my bags, got my reservations, spent each dime I could afford, like a child in wild anticipation, long to hear that all aboard.
Nelly Mackay's Normal as Blueberry Pie is the fourth album of a contentious career that has also included an award-winning role in Brecht Weil's Threepenny Opera and much outspoken animal welfare activism, a cause she shares with Doris Day. Mackay is a feminist who isn't shy about using that F-word, a Weisenheimer who's done stand-up, a prima donna who fought her label to squeeze 23 new songs onto a CD instead of just 16. In 2005, I saw her perform half a dozen non-English titles she'd composed, including Mi Gusta Mañana, about trying to go vegan in Spain. So it seems strange that her first album in 2 years comprises 12 Doris Day covers plus one original, and that it's jazzier than her history or Day's would lead you to expect.
I'm as corny as Kansas in August, high as a flag on the 4th of July. If you'll excuse an expression I use, I'm in love, I'm in love.
But though Normal as Blueberry Pie wouldn't be a Nelly Mackay album if it wasn't a little kooky, in fact, Mackay's arrangements find a graceful midpoint between her postmodern cabaret and Day's popped-up big band singer with chops for miles. It emphasizes the purity Mackay's voice shares with Day's. It's uncluttered, sensual, and free.
Oh, do, do, do what you done, done, done before, baby. Do, do, do what I do, do, do adore. Baby, let's try again, sigh again, fly again to heaven. Baby, see, it's ABC. I love you and you love me. I know, no, no, what a bo, bo, bo should do.
As it happens, the first record I ever bought was Doris Day's Secret Love, which went number one when I was 11. Nevertheless, my copy of Day's Golden Girl was in storage when Normal as Blueberry Pie came my way. It's my tribute to Nelly Mackay's tribute that Mackay has me convinced. Doris Day's Golden Girl is now on my A shelves for life.
Robert Christgau writes the consumer guide to CDs at MSN.com. The new album from Nelly Mackay is called Normal as Blueberry Pie, a tribute to Doris Day. And you can hear the entire album at nprmusic.org.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. If you see only one rapper this year who happens to be Muslim, albino, and legally blind, NPR's Netta Ulubi says it should be Brother Ali. He's on a national tour right now, and he counts some of hip-hop's biggest names among his fans. And a warning, this piece contains language that some listeners may find offensive. Here's Netta Ulubi.
Chuck D of Public Enemy kicks off Brother Ali's new album.
Brothers and sisters, put your hands together. and welcome, Brother Ali.
The album is called Us. In a song with the same title, the musician explains his start.
I started rhyming just to be somebody, to make people notice me at the party.
The new kid, be just the misfit.
The new kid that's albino. Make them say, yeah, I know, but have you heard him rhyme, no? Now I take that same party around the globe, and my story's connected with a lot of folks.
Folks who almost by definition don't have much in common with a blind, Muslim, albino, Caucasian rapper.
From the star, I'm blind in the eye, so I see you with my heart. To me, all of y'all look exactly the same. Fear, faith, compassion, and pain. And try as we may to mask it with names, such as your religion or your past or your race. The same color blood just passed through our veins, and tears taste the same when they splash on your face. The world's getting...
Back in the 1980s, Ali was a kid named Jason Newman, cutting school and scrapping on the streets of North Minneapolis. He loved hip-hop's energy and joy, and its criticism of harsh social systems. Rappers talked about people he'd never heard about in school or church, like Malcolm X or Louis Farrakhan.
You know, a kid like me from the Midwest was so enthralled by the poetry and artistry of people like Rakim that it made me want to know, what is he talking about?
Rakim, one of the all-time greatest MCs, produced classics like Move the Crowd.
He said, all praise due to Allah, and that's a blessing. I wanted to know what that was. And so when Chuck D and KRS-One were saying things like, Farrakhan's a prophet I think you ought to listen to, that initially is what made me track down the Quran.
Brother Ali converted at the age of 15. He followed Imam W. Din Muhammad, who moved the Nation of Islam away from black nationalism and towards a more conventional global Muslim identity. Muhammad was forward-thinking, a champion of interfaith relations.
When I was a kid, there was a group of people that he sent to Malaysia to study the way that a more kind of liberal Islamic society could have this peaceful coexistence between different religions. And I was one of the people that he picked to go over there and study.
Shukran, Brother Ali. Salaam alaikum wa
rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Hip-hop and Islam tend to get caught up in the same misconceptions, says Brother Ali, that they're somehow inherently violent, disrespectful of women, homophobic. Ali says these attitudes are much bigger than either hip-hop or Islam.
They come from weaknesses and insecurity within human beings.
Weaknesses and insecurities Ali has faced himself.
In my old work, I was so ignorant to the hell that gay people are put through because they're deemed to be different. I would say, well, I said the word faggot on my first album. And I'm so thoroughly embarrassed by that now that I have gay friends and gay people that I look up to.
He has girlfriends but doesn't want a girlfriend. He retreats inside himself where he lives life itself in secret. Daddy says people go to hell for being what he is, and he certainly believes him. Cause there ain't no flame that can blaze enough to trump being hated for the way you love. And cry yourself to sleep and hate waking up. It's a cruel world, y'all, shame on us.
You never quite know what's coming on any given Brother Ali track. The first single from his new album is about domestic ecstasy, his intense satisfaction being home with his wife and kids.
Just got married last year, treated so good that it ain't even fair. Already got a boy, now the baby girl's here. Bought us a house like the Bernstein Bears. Not 2 years ago, I was homeless. I mean, crashing on the couch of my homies. Now I'm crashing on the couch with Conan. Signed a mortgage.
In every album, I try to talk about a lot of important things to me that are good, and I try to come from a really sincere, genuine place within myself, but I'd be lying if I didn't include at least one song where I'm just an a-.
In the new album, that might be the song that's a fantasy about getting even with an obnoxious neighbor by stealing and selling his drugs, or the boasts about his former life as a hoodlum.
Hip-hop, you know, both musically and lyrically, has always been about being hard and aggressive.
Jay Smooth hosts New York City's longest-running hip-hop radio show. He's a longtime fan of Brother Ali's. The two are also friends.
Brother Ali is one of the artists who's showing that there can be just as much drama in the day-to-day life of being in a family. Like, love can be just as exciting as fear.
Smooth says telling the truth brings grit and attitude to Ali. Ali's music. When he rhymes about dealing drugs before his conversion, it's about the excruciating boredom of standing on a corner for hours, not the supposed glamour of thug life. In the same way, it's mundane details like crashing on the couch with his kids that fill Brother Ali with an uncompromising, uncorny integrity.
Truth is here, the truth is here. Truth is here, the truth is here. I said the truth is here, the truth is here. I want more. Give me more. We want more.
Ali's language is not always so squeaky clean. He curses a lot, and that's drawn disapproval from more orthodox Muslims. But the musician says he can express his faith even with what he calls his grown-up words.
Everything in Islam is an act of worship. Everything good and pure and genuine that you do is an act of worship. I believe that me being the best artist that I can be translates to me being the most honest artist that I can be. Were I not to show the crass side of myself, I'd be holding something back from my artistry.
Gotta let it out at least enough to let the monster flee. I want more than what you offering me. Songs that make me feel like I'm already free. I'm a rebel in my own right. Y'all don't want to write or think or speak a rhyme standing next to me.
Brother Ali says his music reflects his progress on a spiritual journey. And maybe he's still growing into his faith. Right now, Ali is on a strenuous physical journey as well. His current tour across the United States takes him to almost 50 cities in the next month and a half. Neto Ulibi, NPR News.
Give me more. I want more. More.
You can listen to two songs from Brother Ali's new album, Us, and find a lot more music of all kinds at nprmusic.org.
Nearly a single solitary soul still put the kind of passion to the mic that I hold. One day
the members of the South African rock band Black Jacks, that's spelled B-L-K-J-K-S, grew up in different parts of the country. They spoke different tribal languages, and they listened to a wide range of music, from local tunes to Duke Ellington to Sonic Youth. Our reviewer Tom Moon says their diversity creates an original sound on the band's new album.
Rock has had plenty of run-ins with African rhythm over the years. None of them can quite prepare you for the music of Black Jacks. The four-piece band, based in Johannesburg, specializes in a shadowy, foreboding style of progressive rock that's distinctly African. Beneath fantastic tangles of electric guitar are superheated beats, rhythms that have roots in the township jive dance music that erupted in South Africa in the 1970s. Black Jacks isn't some chipper world music operation masquerading as a rock band. These guys think like rockers. The music's unruliness suggests that. And so do the songs about isolation in the digital age. But check out how lively the pulse is. This band saunters right past the rhythmic ruts of most current rock. Their music is full of wild and totally unscripted lunges. Not everything on the Black Jacks debut is super intense. The album's extended final track is almost a lullaby, retelling a South African fable about the ghosts and monsters who visit misbehaving children. Okay, sure, there's a degree of novelty at work here. The band's from South Africa, which is not exactly known as a rock mecca. And its sound can be summed up in the glib language of the mashup. You know, Here's what happens when loud guitars clash with deep African grooves. But listen closely, and you discover that Blackjacks have churned these influences into an organic and fiercely original sound.
The new CD from the group Blackjacks is called After Robots. Our reviewer is Tom Moon.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.
And next, we open up the pages of the Washington Post magazine, which we do just about every week to find interesting stories about the way we live now. Today, we focus on a legendary figure for many Washingtonians, and by that we mean the people who live in D.C., not the tourists who visit the monuments, not the people who ride around in chauffeur-driven town cars, no disrespect, but the people who live in the parts of town the tourists and big shots rarely visit. His name is Chuck Brown, and he is known as the Godfather of Go-Go.
Give me the bridge now!
It's a style of music that blends African and Latin beats as well as the call and response tradition common in many black churches. Go-go has been around for more than 30 years, and the music is widely sampled, which is to say beats and melodies are borrowed by other artists. But as a genre, it's had some difficulty breaking out past the greater Washington, D.C. area. Now at 73, can I tell it? 73 years old.
Yes, of course.
And nearly 20 albums under his belt. Chuck Brown is still looking for ways to expand Go-Go's reach, and he's with us now. Welcome.
Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
And I just have to mention, you're looking as fabulous as always. You got your signature look. He's got his signature snap brim fedora.
Thank you.
Just overall fabulousness is in the house, I just have to mention. So, having a little trouble working the headphones over his chapeau, but he's given it his best effort. So let's give a little taste of the go-go sound. Here's Wind Me Up, Chuck, from your 2001 live album. Here it is.
I want y'all to make some noise, kiddo. One more time. Say what? I love you so much. Oh, you're spoiling me now. You're spoiling me, y'all. I want to start off easy. You're so breezy. I want to start off easy, y'all. A little bit loud.
See, we're having a little trouble bringing the music down because we're kind of in the groove now. What is it about go-go that is so, what?
Well, it's
how
a
you describe
feeling,
it?
You know, it's a groove. It's a feeling, you know, that goes on and on and on. That's why they call it go-go, you know, because I've said this time and time again. You know, back in the day when I got the idea of creating this sound, they had go-go clubs, go-go girls, you know, and but no go-go music. So I decided to call it go-go music. You know, we were doing top 40, and all we did was just cut it down, drop the percussion in there, which the idea came from the Los Latinos, the band that I played with earlier, and also that African feel. And call the response, you drop it down, and you talk to the people, and they talk back to you. And that's how I got started. I was trying to get it started in 1972 when I put out a tune called We the People. And I came back with another tune called Blow Your Whistle. And the kids were shaking tambourines, riding their bicycles. And Max Kidd gave me the idea to write a song called Blow Your Whistle. You know, he was a great producer, Max Kidd. He produced that. And he also turned us on to people like Don Cornelius and got us into the Soul Train thing.
But is it tiring? One of the things about it does go on and on. Does it wear you out?
Not me. No. Not yet. Not yet.
Not
and,
even.
You know, we used to play 4 hours without stopping. We played as much as 4 hours without stopping. We played 3 hours, and not here recently, we've done 2 hours, 2.5 hours without stopping. This is the way we like to do it. I like to take breaks, you know what I'm saying? Once we get them people on that flow, we want to keep them on there.
I see. Now, you know, I think a lot of people, even if hard to imagine, they're not familiar with Chuck Brown, but on the off chance they're not, many people will have heard Go-Go sampled, as we mentioned, in other songs. A prime example would be Nelly, who sampled Bustin' Loose for his 2002 mega hit, Hot in Here. And I'm going to play just a little bit. Here it is.
No deceiving, nothing up for Steven. No teasing, I need you to get up.
Okay, that's a very good place to have a little little edit there, since we don't know whether little ears are listening right now. So, but how do you feel about being sampled?
You love it.
You don't feel like people are like stealing your thunder.
That's the best thing that can happen to you. It keeps you going. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Because you know, I appreciate the fact somebody thought enough of my music to sample it. In 1976, that's when the Go-Go started catching on. You know, and from then on, I did a tune called Bustin' Loose. I started doing it in 76, and we recorded it in 78, and it became a number one hit in the country.
Well, sometimes people are flattered by it, but on the other hand, sometimes people feel irritated because they don't necessarily feel that the original works have perhaps gotten the appreciation from the widest audience that they might prefer. And in fact, there are those who say that one of the reasons that Go-Go hasn't traveled as far as its own genre outside of the D.C. area is that it's best experienced live. If you're there, you really feel it as a kind of a crowd in-person experience. Do you think that's true?
Well, that's where you get the full effect of Go-Go. You got the crowd there with you, you know. But in the studio, it is hard to get it. But you can get some nice, clean hits out of the studio, which I'm fortunate enough to say that we have, you know. And I'm also fortunate enough to say that Go-Go has gone all over the world. See, that's a statement that people say Go-Go hasn't gone nationwide. Those people really don't know. It hasn't hit every city in the United States, but it has hit the major cities because I've been to them. And the first time up in 1970, I think it was in 74, I recorded Air Record. I was trying to get some Go-Go together then. That was in 1970. We played at the Sugar Shack in Boston, Massachusetts. And that was quite a while back. And people really liked it. And I was testing it then. So in 1972, that's when I started cutting, I cut my first record.
Well, but maybe it's a thing where people will recognize an Atlanta sound or a Minneapolis sound, or maybe they just don't associate D.C. with the music scene. You think that could be it?
Not really, because, you know, I played all over the country and all in Europe, all over Japan, everywhere. You know, Switzerland, Germany. Japan, Osaka, Yokohama, Nagoya.
I understand you're huge Tokyo. In Japan.
Yes, ma'am.
How'd that happen?
They like our music. They like our music, and I've been over there several times. You know,
is it different? I mean, do you get a different response? Performing in D.C. and then performing in Japan?
They are really into it. They are really into it. I love Japan. Psycho. When you say psycho, I mean everybody goes off in Japan, and they appreciate your music. You know, I can walk down the street in Japan, look behind me. I can see 10 young people walking behind me about 15 feet, maybe 20 feet away, you know. And I turn around.
Will you get that here?
Yeah, it'll be following me. I turn around and say, what y'all doing back there? Come on up here. You know they want some autographs or something. So I stand right there in the middle of the street and sign autographs, you know.
Well, you are rather attention getting.
Well, I'm just so grateful for that. Knowing where I come from, you know what I'm saying?
There's a very interesting backstory, which is captured in the Washington Post piece. But I still want to ask you, and we don't have time, sadly, to get into the whole story of how Chuck Brown became the legend that he is. But how is it possible that at 73, if you don't mind my telling it, you're still touring, you're still performing, not just occasionally, but regularly?
Yes.
How do you do it?
Well, you see, some people think I'm 75, but they gave me a couple of years off for good behavior. You know? So, yes,
how do you do it?
Well, it's the energy that's still there. You know, I still have the desire, I still have the energy. I still have some fire, you know, I'm still getting higher, so ain't no point in being retired. I've told several people this. I just want to go on and on until it's over.
Let me just clarify what you just said. You said you're still getting hired, mm-hmm. for those who may have misheard. What is it? You're still getting hired.
Still getting hired, so that's why I'm not
retired.
Not
the other word that you thought, maybe, that he said. But what is the secret to that? Is it just because you're constantly performing, you're mm-hmm. energetic? Do you watch your diet carefully?
No, I don't watch your diet. I eat like a soul brother, you know. Yeah, cornbread, black-eyed peas, collard greens, lima beans, things like that, you know. But you know, my wife is a nurse also, and she's been taking care of me and the kids for the last, ever since she started working about 15 years ago. And so she watches over me pretty well.
Keeping a pep in your step.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm happy all the time. So that's what, you know, I like to make people happy. I like to see people smile. I like to make people laugh. You know what I'm saying? And it makes me happy knowing that I'm making somebody else happy.
With all that you've done, is there anything else that you have yet to do that you want to do? Any mountain left to climb?
Well, I would like to see the success of my children. You know, my children have talent. They all can sing and rap and whatever. And right now I got two kids in Virginia Tech. My son, Nikos Brown, number 47, he's a linebacker, and he's doing great. And my other son is down there now, Wilder Brown. He's also a linebacker. And you know, I like to see them go to the pros. And I'm not speaking so well of myself because I'm just going to do this until it's over.
All right. You know? Well, thank you so much for visiting with us. What should we go out on? What would you like to hear?
Oh, give me a little doo-wop.
Okay, we'll play that at the end of the program. Chuck Brown is a music legend. He is the creator of Go-Go. He was kind enough to join us from our Washington, D.C. studios. If you want to read the profile of Chuck Brown in this week's Washington Post magazine, we'll have a link on our website. Just go to npr.org and click on Tell Me More. Mr. Brown, thank you.
Thank you for having me.